Blog Talk Radio.
This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, this is the Tornado, Tony Pettigal.
This is another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. We have special guest Rick Vardell on tonight, who's going to be in a Gladiator Challenge event. He's the super heavyweight champion of Gladiator Challenge. He's coming up on an event where he's going to be fighting the only guy or the last guy to beat him in the cage. So we'll have to see what he has to say about all that. And we're going to talk to him around 8:30, but we got a big fight coming up this weekend, so I wanted to play that clip because I just watched all three episodes of 24/7 off the bootleg link, of course, as I always do. But I watched them all, and there was some indication that Manny was a little distracted when he was in the Philippines by the fact that he's a congressman now. You know, he got elected as a Filipino congressman for some district over there. And so he said to Freddie one day, "I miss my job." And he was talking about Congress. And Freddie was like, "This is your job." So he's kind of drifting off. So the old discussion of, you know, are Floyd and Manny going to fight? You know, it's kind of getting pushed by the wayside by a lot of things now. Of course, Floyd just had a hearing in Nevada. He's going to have to be dealing with all this court stuff with the criminal charges against him most of next year. It's the early part of next year anyway, so they're probably not going to see him fight till next summer. And Manny.
Yeah, at least next summer.
And I doubt it'll be Manny. And Manny, I think, after watching those three episodes, they were worried about him, you know, but Freddie is not going to give him the Mickey speech at this point. He's not quite ready. He was a little distracted, but even all the guys said, you know, when he came back to L.A., he was on lockdown, and they were real confident that he was going to be okay. And Margarito, meanwhile, he's about to get on the plane to Texas for the fight, and they're telling everybody, "Oh, he's fine, but he's 4 pounds overweight." That's, you know, I don't know if that's a big deal, but sounds like it's neat.
Well, how many days to the weigh-in is he 4 pounds overweight? 4 pounds overweight is seriously nothing. I mean, if I can go 15 pounds in 3 days, basically, 4 pounds, I mean, you'd have to take in a big shit.
Yeah, but have you seen Margarito recently?
No, do I want to?
He's like fucking skin and bones.
Yeah, true.
Where he's going to get it. And Manny doesn't have to lose weight. He's much more relaxed. And he's still, you know, back to training hard. They're definitely going to have the advantage in speed. And one thing I noticed when I was watching Margarito spar is he's coming out to the sides a lot to try to land those body shots. Yeah, that might work against, like, a slow, fat guy. But, you know, Manny, first of all, is going to be moving with his body. So he's going to be a hard target to hit with those looping shots. And he takes so long to swing out to the side and throw those shots with his long arms, Manny's going to be able to hit him with 6 or 7 punches to the face while he's got his hands down.
If you go back and take a look at the article that I wrote on the fight, one thing you'll see is Margarito is a guy that can very straightforward, and I'm gonna pretend, okay, because I have no evidence to the contrary, that all of his wins were legit, okay? So let's say that every one of his wins up to the Cotto fight was legit. No pinned hand rats, no controversy. He went out there, he won those fights, and he destroyed the other tournaments in front of Miguel Cotto. But the one thing I noticed in the Cotto fight was Cotto, who is not the biggest-footed guy in the boxing ring, was able, for the first maybe 5 or so rounds, able to really outbox Margarito and really make him look slow, because Margarito was a lead-footed guy. He's not sitting on his feet, and he doesn't move very well. He's a guy that comes in straight forward and really just overwhelms you. His hands aren't the fastest. He's got long arms. And he just tried to club you down. So, okay, let's say all of his wins were legit. He didn't have the painted wraps until the Mosley fight when he got caught. And he really legitimately beat guys at Kermit Cintron and, Miguel Cotto and, other fighters, Hercules Cavallos and several others. Look at the style of those guys. Kermit Cintron is a knockout puncher. He likes to stand in front of you. I was at their second fight in Atlantic City. And Cintron won the first round, but he was winning by standing in front of Margarito and basically trying to slug with him. Margarito started slow, but by the second round, he picked up momentum, knew the guy wasn't going to move on him, and he just used his superior chin and his superior size against him. Now, Margarito's, before Mosley, his last loss was to Paul the Punisher Williams, and Williams won like the first 6 or 7 rounds. And then near the end, Margarito was getting to him late, but it was But in that fight, you had a guy with faster hands, longer arms, faster feet. What I see happening here, it's going to come down. Now, I have a friend of mine that I think he's more of a Manny Pacquiao hater than anything, but he's like, no, Margarito is going to knock him out. Very well could happen. He's a big man. If he still has the punching power that was legitimate, and not, aided by any illegal rats, he very well could knock out a much smaller fighter who's stepping up in weight once again. But the way I see it happening is Freddie Roach is such a great trainer. What he's going to have Pacquiao doing is look at Pacquiao the Dakota, not only with his hands, but with his feet. He was moving to the sides, and he's hitting Cotto from all different angles. And Cotto is faster than Margarito. It could be a situation where if Pacquiao can keep Margarito off balance with his speed, it could be like hanging up a big heavy bag and just moving angles around and hitting at will. Because Margarito doesn't know defense. Margarito never met a punch that he could slip, to be totally honest. I could see Pacquiao literally using that right hook, jab into the probe, jab to the body, step over to the right, fire a right hook to the head, and then a straight left right down the center, then double up with a left to the body and a left uppercut. He could throw a right and 3 lefts. That's how amazing the guy is with his arsenal. They're all going to come from weird angles, and they're all going to land flush. And the thing is, I see Margarito's face breaking down before anything. I've seen him cut in fights. I've seen him, if you watch the Mosley fight, definitely showed some facial bruising, some facial damage in there after all the punches Mosley hit him with. And I think that's going to be the, deciding factor more than anything is the damage that he's going to do to Margarito's face, the fact he's going to be hitting him at will. And by the 9th, 10th round, like I said, I predicted to be like 229 to the 10th. But finally, the referee, Lawrence Cole, is just going to say, by the 8th round, if you don't start putting up an effort, I'm going to pull this plug. And I think, by the 10th round, Pacquiao's going to be landing at will, and Cole's going to say, this is enough. I've seen enough.
We'll make it to the 7th. I don't think it'll even get to the 7th. I think it'll end up by the 6th round or in the 6th round. I just think Pacquiao has that much talent. You know, like he just starts injuring people right away. I mean, you go through a first round and you're getting hit with two or three more times the punches that you're landing. It's the way he does it. You know, if he's on his game, and if Margarito comes in there looking like he is in sparring with his hands coming down every time he tries to throw a big loop and punch, then you know, he's going to take a lot more damage a lot quicker than he's used to. I mean, his reach doesn't appear to be an advantage here, I don't think. But let me just have Freddie Roach comment on the situation straight from the 24/7 episode. Here you go.
Hear
that?
I heard some laughing. What did he say?
Freddie said he thinks he's the tornado. The fucking real tornado's coming.
What, are they buying me? Man. Are they sending me down to Dallas?
Yeah, dude.
That's so nice. I'm waiting for my ticket to my plane fare.
Said you're coming out. The real tornado. It's going to be at the Margarito fight. But Manny looks real good, you know, in his latest sparring. He's as fast as ever. They actually had a speed bag delivered to the gym in the Philippines, and it was the day they were leaving. They had been waiting for it forever. It was like a custom speed bag, and, you know, they had been leaving that day. So it was like, what the hell? But that's the Philippines for you. And I guess once he gets to L.A., he's more in fight mode. They did complain because he had to go to Las Vegas to campaign for Harry Reid, who is a big-time supporter of boxing. He used to be a boxer himself, apparently. I didn't read that until recently. But Harry Reid, I think he's still a majority leader of something, the House. Yeah, the other one, the lady that got booted, Pelosi, from the
House. Oh, thank you.
But Harry Reid, yeah, he was campaigning for Harry Reid. So it was funny, Manny comes back from the trip, and Freddie Roach says to him, the only guy I would ever vote for is you. But, yeah, he's ready. And there's some controversy there with the hand-wrapping situation. That it seems like there's at least two clips now where they're on video in the Margarito camp making fun of that incident. One time in the 24/7 episode, and, one guy comes over and he's got a slab of cement, and he comes over and they're wrapping Margarito's hands, and he comes over and Margarito's the one that says, hey, put it over here, put it right here on my hand, you know. So the guy comes over and puts it on his hand, and then his trainer starts wrapping it. He's going to go in the ring with it. You know, it's kind of funny when you look at it, but it's not funny the fact that they would do that, you know. It's just
right.
Respectful. You know, just for a cheap laugh, you're going to do that, and you're going to lighten the idea that you did, that you went in and you got caught doing that, and you're going to go in there in these interviews where they're showing him just him in the ring, and he's looking every which way but at the camera, talking about how I didn't know that was in there, you know, and
we're so much
playing for him, but he's not looking at the camera. It's like he's afraid to look in the eyes of the people that are going to be trying to figure out whether he's telling the truth or not, watching that.
Rich, I'm going to tell you something right now. I've been involved in the sport of boxing for about almost 17 years now as an active participant, whether that was as a fighter, whether it's been a trainer, just working out. Now, I've had my hands wrapped thousands of times. A lot of times I've wrapped them myself, whether I'm getting ready to work out, I've actually wrapped my hands just like a traditional fighter would, with the gauze and everything. And then I've used hand wraps. There's other ways to wrap my hands. If there was an illegal substance in those wraps, I would know. And Margarito is a guy that's 32 years old. He's, you know, a year or so younger than me. And he's been involved in boxing since his teen years, just like I have. He's actually probably been boxing longer than I have, and he's been on a professional world championship level for the last decade. You're trying to tell me that he would not know that something did not feel right? I could take one of my friends that, you know, I train, either Hecker Allure that we interviewed, or my friend Mike that I've trained a few times. And Mike and Laura, they both had actual hand wraps that they bought out of a store, you know, Everlast. And then, but a few times, you know, just to give them the feel of what it's like to have a trainer wrap your hands. and, you know, give you instructions. Like, this is what I was going to do, like, you know, not sparring, but, like, some serious, like pad work with him. Like, I was really getting him ready to just to get the psychology of the sport. You know, and I would say, look, when a trainer wraps your hands and he's kind of looking you in the eyes and he's talking to you, like, all right, man, well, like Coach Cooper, when he would wrap my hands at Lock Haven, you know, he'd look at you in the eye and be like, all right, man, Tony, here's what you got to do tonight. Yes, we got this kid. You know, he's taller than you. You got to get inside. You got to rip that body. You got to, you know, get up in his face. You got to move him backwards from the front step. Don't give him don't give him an inch to breathe. And it's just in that way, the guy's looking at you and he's kind of pumping you up at the same time. Now, I wrapped Mike and Laura's hands on a few occasions. I'll tell you right now, if I wrapped their hands right now and put a foreign substance in there, they would know.
Well, he just he didn't punch with
bullshit.
It. He hadn't punched.
Yeah, not only just the feel of it. If I had a piece of plaster in my wrap, and because I always hit my own hands, like I always punch, you know, my palms, you know, just to make sure they feel comfortable. You don't think I would know that? Come on. So Margarita.
I'm just playing devil's advocate there. I don't believe that he didn't know. There was some evidence in the episodes of 24/7 that I watched today. They had a former sparring partner in there who had been in with Margarito before and got his orbital bone broken. And he said, you know, the one thing that he could say about Margarito is he was always heavy-handed, you know, in sparring.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the specific thing that he remembered about it. And then Freddie Goetz even said in another interview when they were discussing the issue that, hey, listen, you know, this doesn't just go to the last fight there. It goes before that, because if you watch some of these older fights before that, like the
damage he did to Cotto's face. Look at the
not like that, but his actions after the fight, right, that Freddie Roach pointed out, that he's being interviewed and he's in the ring, and most fighters, their first instinct is to take the gloves right off. He's got his gloves still on, you know, through the whole thing, and he's like trying to scratch his nose with his gloves on.
Right. Well, that, you know what?
Maybe.
I didn't notice that until you mentioned it now, but that makes a lot of sense, you know? It makes a hell of a lot of sense.
So all the pieces started coming together, and you're like, well, geez, you know, it was worse than just the one thing. And then on top of that, they're going out there and making fun of the camp of Margarito is making fun of Freddie Roach's Parkinson's disease.
Yeah, and that's disgusting, you know. I mean, you know, Freddie Roach doesn't want to have Parkinson's disease. I mean,
yeah.
Who does?
And the same clip that they did that, they're making fun of the hand wrap issue as well by putting a piece of metal on his hands. So, I don't know, it's crazy. The way they got this whole thing set up. And then, you know, now they got the training camps going back and forth with each other. But the only thing that I think that Margarito has on his side is the fact that it's in Texas, you know? It's so close to Mexico. What kind of support system he's going to have down there, whether people are just going to boo him because they don't like the fact that he's a cheater or whatever, or there's going to be enough Mexican fans to drown them out. You know, so that's an interesting dynamic. But as far as his fighting style and his chances, I don't give him a shot in hell of knocking Pacquiao out.
Well, I do. I give him a chance, a puncher's chance, because of the fact that he is a big man. And, you know, and like I said, it's hard to say about his other fights. I mean, Rich, we can't say that the fighting, I mean, hey, we got great evidence with the not taking the gloves off and shit like that. But we can't prove that his fights against Cotto and Cintron and Golden Johnson and several other fighters were not legit. And they weren't, you know, aided with, you know, tainted wraps. So he's a big man. He obviously has knocked guys out before on a world-class level. There is obviously the possibility that he could overwhelm and catch up and trap a smaller man and, you know, just physically break him down. But I just see this fight. I kind of see it, if you go back to the fight between Pacquiao and De La Hoya, it was a fight where he never knocked De La Hoya down, but he punished him severely over 8 rounds, to the fact that, you know, De La Hoya had nothing left. Cotto, he knocked down in like the third and fourth rounds with odd angled shots, and then from there he just systematically broke him down. I see this more being like the De La Hoya fight, where he just used a superior speed and superior energy. It was almost like a gnat. Just like, or, I mean, I'm not going to say a gnat. I'm going to say, like, a single killer bee buzzing around you where you can't swat them away and just stinging the living shit out of you. Mm-hmm. That's what I see you being here, just so fast, like supersonic speed, like and just stinging the living piss out of you and, you know, and beat me that way.
Right. Well, I think Margarita's just got way too many hang-ups, and even Freddie Roach and Manny said that that's what they were working on. They were working on his bad habits, you know, taking advantage of his bad habits. And one of the worst habits you can have as a boxer is having both hands down away from your face at the same time. And one of the things that I've developed into my game, probably didn't have as much in the beginning, but I have now, just practicing, not even getting hit by somebody else, but just sitting in the bag. I always have one hand up by my face, covering at least my chin. You know, if something comes in when you're in the middle of a fight, you want to be able to put one hand up at least and block it or make it go a different direction than into your chin. And I don't care how good a chin Margarito has, if he gets hit in it three times as much as he's hitting the other guy, and if he's working on the principle of going to the body to kill the head with Pacquiao, he ain't got a shot in the world. I hope that's not a real, you know, plan. Maybe he's just throwing that out there to dupe the Pacquiao camp. But, I mean, that's the total wrong idea to go. It's the opposite way, if you think about it. Like Tony Petronelli told me in my last sparring session, you know, this guy's got the reach on you, so you want to go to his body. When you get the reach on somebody else, why are you going to the body? You know, and the one thing that works and always works for a guy with greater reach is a good jab. And I didn't see, I saw hooks and uppercuts from Margarito. Not many jabs at all. He didn't seem to be using the jab or even seem to have one in his sparring sessions. It was just all hooks.
Let me counter your point there. Let me just hit you with a counterpunch here, Rich. The two points you just made. Why would a taller man, you know, want to work to the body? Well, it's hard for me to say because I rarely ever was the taller man. But tall fighters, they can hit the body, but they have to do it in, you know, a smart way. They don't want to get inside and be like a Marciano or a Frazier or a guy like that that's like crouching, or like a Tyson that's getting like right in on side, right in, smothering you and ripping body shots. You don't want to do that. What a tall guy would want to do to hit the body is, because I was at the fight where Margarito, the taller man, knocked out Kermit Cintron with a body shot. You know, what you want to do is maybe throw like a right hand to the head, dip, and then rip a left hook to the body, and then get out. You don't want to stay in, then you want to go back to using your advantage of your reach. You're going to have sometimes some taller fighters are going to lack good jabs. Let me go back to tall fighters. George Foreman was a relatively tall fighter, 6'4". I mean, he's not a giant, like, tall heavyweight like Valiyev or the Klitschko's, but for most of the part, he was bigger than his opponents height-wise. George Foreman could hit the body. You know, he would come in, he would use a thudding jab, and then he would, a lot of times land a single shot to the body from the outside. You know, he'd just kind of dip down a little bit, rip a body shot, and then kind of just back the guy off. So a taller guy can hit the body. I mean, it's just because you're tall, you don't want to give up, you know, that weapon. The other part about the jab, some guys, whether you're tall or whether you're short, are just not going to have a good jab. It's just some guys just don't throw one well. It's, you know, certain guys do things well. I don't have a good straight right hand, even though I'm right-handed. I have a better overhand right, and I have a great left hook. Surprisingly, for a short guy, I have a good jab. It's not a thud, it's not a whip jab like a Muhammad Ali type jab, or like spears you like a whip. My jab is like a thudding jab. It's more of like a George Foreman, a telephone pole type jab. Where, and certain guys, even if you're short, I can out jab a taller guy. Why? Because I know how to use angles. And I can use my jab to set up a body shot. I can use my jab to set up a hook. I can use my jab to actually break a guy's nose, which I've done before. I have a couple clips on YouTube where I fought taller guys, and you'll see on there me out jabbing. I mean, the one guy, I broke his nose with a jab. And that actually kept him out of the regional tournament in 1996.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's pretty much as we're going to give to the Pacquiao debate.
But the one thing about Mark Brito, he does not have a good, he just does not have a good jab. That is not his strength. And I think that can be a detriment in this fight because, you know, even De La Hoya, who did have a very good jab but was well past his prime, you know, he would have really needed that jab to keep a guy like Pacquiao off, and he just couldn't use it. He just couldn't do it. So if De La Hoya, even past his prime, couldn't keep Pacquiao off of the jab, who the hell is going to think Margarito, who doesn't have a good jab, is going to be able to keep him off?
All right. Well, I don't know. That's a good question. Well, we got a couple other boxing stories to talk about. First of all, we might see David Tua versus Evander Holyfield coming up.
You're
the 37-year-old Tua is going to fight in New Zealand in March, and then he's going to face either Monty Barrett, Evander Holyfield, or Haseem Rahman. And this is yeah. We'll see.
I was at the last fight. It was in Philadelphia. Tell me how funny this was. This was on the Bernard Hopkins Murade Hakkari undercard back in 2003. And everybody in the audience swore Tua won that fight. I sat there with a couple friends of mine and my neighbor. We're watching the fight, and they called it a draw. And we said, are you kidding me? A draw? Are you serious? And the score was all three judges had, I think, the same. No, excuse me, I'm wrong. One judge had Tua winning by, like, 4 points. Another judge had Rockman winning by 2 points. And then the third judge had it a draw. And I'm like, first of all, there's no way the fight was a draw. And second of all, the judge that had Rockman ahead ought to be shot. So we get home, the fight was televised on HBO, and we watched the HBO broadcast the next day. And Merchant and Lampley and whoever the third commentator was, whether it was Max Kellerman or who, I don't remember, they're sitting there going, man, Rockman's dominating this fight. You know, Rockman's definitely winning. And Howard Letterman scored it a 4-point swing for Rockman. The HBO analyst had him winning easy, but everybody in the crowd swore to him won that fight.
Wow, we shall see what happens. I don't know if he's actually going to fight him, but it should be interesting, whatever happens. And there's a kind of interesting story about a former world champion, Steve Collins, over in Ireland. He had to go to court for assaulting a bouncer at National Stadium in 2006. And I'm just going to play the news report. It's only like a minute and a half here, but here it is.
Former boxing world champion Steve Collins has been acquitted of assaulting a bouncer at the National Stadium in June 2006. A jury of the Circuit Criminal Court returned a unanimous verdict.
After a 4-day trial, Steve Collins said he now has the verdict he deserved and his good name restored. The former middleweight world champion had consistently denied assaulting a bouncer at the National Stadium in June 2006. He said he was punched and manhandled and stopped from re-entering the stadium where he was working as a TV commentator.
I'm a professional fighter. You know, everyone has a right to defend themselves. The level of defense to me was very restrained, very, very much so. I was very much disciplined. That's when I apologize to my family for what they went through, to my wife, my children, and especially my children, because they're young, and them. Very emotional.
The bouncer, Adriatic Vodo, claimed Steve Collins became aggressive when refused entry through a VIP door. He said the boxer asked if he knew who he was and said he would put his teeth on the floor. He then said, your 2 seconds are up, and punched him in the mouth. After deliberation for an hour and a half, the jury found Steve Collins not guilty in a unanimous verdict. During the trial, Mr. Collins had also alleged that attempts were made to extract money from him after the incident. Gardaí told the court there was no evidence of any complaint of blackmail. Vivian Trainer, RTE News at the Dublin Circuit Criminal.
How do you like that, huh?
Nice.
You know who I am? You're going to put your teeth on the floor, buddy. That's
right. I'll tell you what was fun last night, Rich. You'll get a kick out of this. I was going to dinner with some friends of mine, some guys that I've known these guys forever. And we were going to a place in Hollyville Wednesday night, has a special on wings. We're like, hey, you know, we haven't been there in a while. Let's go out to dinner. And I had a real bad day, so, you know, it was definitely good to just sit down and just laugh with some friends for a while. So we're going to this place, and Wednesday night, this place is packed because it is wing special. So we're going to the door. My one friend's like, oh, man, I'm starving tonight, man. I'm starving. Joey, I hope you're listening. I'm telling the story. I'm starving tonight. So I said, all right. I said, you need me to push some people around? They're like, yeah, push some people around. Go ahead, show what you can do. So I walk in the door, walk, you know, to put my name in. They're like, yeah, so how many are with your party? I'm like, five. They're like, all right, come right ahead. I'm like, all right, guys, let's go. We just walk right to the front. They're like, how did you do that? I said, there's one word for you. They're like, what, respect? I'm like, no, tornado. Actually, and I hope they're not listening because it's going to kill, you know, it's going to kill my cred. But it just happened to be everybody else was looking for, like, small two-people tables, and there was one big five-person or six-person table open, and there was no other groups of six. So we just happened to get it.
Well, we're going to get Rick Vardell on the phone, the MMA fighter, who is going to be fighting, I believe. We'll have to ask him about that. But he's going to be fighting his nemesis. And he's 47 years old, by the way.
Nice.
He answers the phone. Let's go, Rick.
Hi, this is Rick at Vardell's Air Conditioning. I'm sorry I'm not able to cover the phone right now. If you leave your name and number along with a short message, I'll return your call as soon as possible. Thank you.
Hey, Rick, this is Rebel Rouse and Rich Bergeron on the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show that you're supposed to be on right now. Let's try to connect with you. We'll try you back in about 2 or 3 minutes here. Hopefully we'll be able to get you. Talk to you later. I love it. We have people with answering machines.
Well, at least it's not one where you read his number out so everybody in the world can get it. So, while we're waiting for him, I guess we'll talk about some of the fights that went down last week. HBO and Showtime had several fight cards on, which was kind of nice because I was a little under the weather last week and got to watch some fights.
Would you believe I watched some fights? I watched the Johnson, Glenn Johnson fight. I tuned in just in time to see the knockout. It was like the round before that I started watching. He really impressed me. I'm still in touch with his lady, PR lady. And this next Thursday or the Thursday after that, we're going to try to get him on the show. But she's working on it. He's traveling this week. But he was great. Put on an awesome performance there. And the guy out, even though there was a little controversy, Alan Green wants to.
I did not think there was anything wrong.
Me either.
And the reason to say that is Alan Green was turning away.
Right.
You know, if I throw a punch at your face and you turn, well, I can't stop a punch. And it reminded me of years ago when I was fighting. I was fighting a guy. We were fighting at Penn State, and I was starting to take control. He had won early in the fight. I was starting to take over, and I had him wobbled up against the ropes, and I come in to fire a right hand, and he just completely turned his face and turned his head. I landed a punch in the back of the head. So he goes down, and he's, like, wobbling, and he's trying to, like, signal, like, that I hit him, and he's, like, pointing to the back of his head. The referee looked at him and said, you turned. You turned and let me put your face through the ropes trying to get a break. And the referee actually was going to penalize him for it, but then giving him a warning.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the thing with Alan Green was kind of turning away. Now, most of the shots Glenn Johnson was landing were on the side of the head by the temple and the ear. A few landed near the back of the head, but that's because the guy was dipping away from him. And, you know, you can't, you know, when you're throwing a punch and it's about to connect, it's really
freaking hard to stop it.
Right. And the fact that the guy just took his time getting up, he's talking to the ref instead of getting up. You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, to blame it's you. You didn't get up in time, buddy. I mean, when you get up, your eyes were glassy. Everybody could see that, you know? He didn't want to admit it. He wants to challenge it. He wants to you know, win on a technicality or some shit. But I don't think he should. I think it's a stupid decision on his part to even make an issue of it. No, you got caught. Accept it. Move on.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Anyway, there's another fight. The main event there. Was it Marquez? Somebody else? Rafael Marquez and
Juan Manuel Lopez.
Right.
And that one thing, I was watching that fight with my dad, and we had, you know, we both came up with the same observation. Lopez is a good young fighter. He's very exciting, but he's got a lot of flaws. Yeah. You know, he's easy to hit. He doesn't have a great chin. Like I said, my good friend Rogers Matagua put him through hell and back last year, and Rogers had him wobbling all over the ring and on the verge of a stoppage.
Yeah. Marquez did a good job, but he takes too many punches to give him, and then he just didn't have enough left in the tank. I mean, it seemed like he was just.
Yeah, I like Rafael Marquez. He's a hell of a fighter. He's got a lot of heart. Those fights with Israel Vasquez, especially the first three, took a lot out of him.
Yeah.
He's had some other tough fights throughout his career. You can just tell that the guy is past his prime. He was moving up pretty much two weight classes. You could tell the size difference between the guys. If Marquez was a natural at that weight and maybe a couple years younger, I think it would have been a different story, to be totally honest. But he just didn't have enough left in the tank.
Yeah.
Let's go on to the HBO card now. The first fight was your boy Robert Cadiz Guerrero. Very impressive decision. I didn't get to see a whole lot of that because I was watching the Marquez-Lopez fight. Now, the main event, which I didn't get to see a whole lot of because I was starting to fall asleep, was that against, you know, Matisse in New Jersey.
Yeah.
My one buddy is, you know, praising Judah for the win. But everybody else I've read and everybody else I've talked to said, Rob her me.
Yeah.
No way Judah should have won that fight. The judge that gave him seven rounds should be, like, castrated. There's no way he's had seven out of those 12 rounds. Uh-uh. No way.
You know how everybody loves
and before I forget, I also want to, we actually had a, one of our former guests fought on Friday night.
Oh, which one?
It's a boy from Massachusetts that we interviewed. What the hell is his name? He's a young up-and-coming fighter. He knocked out James McGirt.
Oh, Danny O'Connor? No.
Danny O'Connor.
Danny
I can't remember his name, and I don't have my computer in front of me. But a Hispanic name.
He knocked out who?
He knocked out James McGirt, Buddy McGirt's boy.
No. That was Edwin Rodriguez. He's not a former guest.
Yeah, what?
He's not a former guest.
We didn't have him on?
No, we tried to get him on. He was one of Dennis's guys, remember? Dennis
I
was supposed to hook it up, and I tried to get him on, and we couldn't get him on.
I swore we talked to him. Because when I was watching the phone with my dad, I'm like, yeah, Dad, we interviewed that guy. He was a really cool guy. I was like, yeah, Rich, we've been doing this for 3 years now. I sometimes will get our guests confused.
We should have had him. We had the lines out to him, but.
Yeah, because I remember when I saw the name, I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, I remember it because I remember us talking about him, you know, being a local kid from your area and
you
doing real well.
Okay.
One of our almost former guests, you know, a very impressive win over James McGirt, you know, stopped him in the ninth round. James isn't his father, but he's still a pretty good fighter.
Yeah, it was a rough fight, too. It was good for him to get up to that level of competition and do so.
Oh, absolutely.
I've seen him in a couple of shows earlier on in his career. He's pretty good. I met him in person, too, at the LA Colombo event. It was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And I left some messages for his manager, and he never called me back. Still got the same manager, so maybe I'll give him another call and be like, hey, I've waited 2 years for you to call me. What the hell is going on? did happen.
Also, on the Pacquiao Margarito undercard this weekend, we got, a few interesting fights going on. One of them is a very top Philadelphia prospect, and I know you probably heard me talk about him before on here, by the name of Mike Jones.
Mike Jones,
he is 20-something and 0 now, I'm sure of it. He's been featured in Ring Magazine on the up-and-coming stars, and he's stepping up. Jesus Cabas, I don't have, like I said, on my computer in front of me, like, I know I'm butchering the guy's name, but I'm not butchering it as bad as Mike Jones is going to butcher him on Saturday night. And the only recommendation that the Philadelphia Daily News gave to Mike Jones is, this is his big chance. It's a really good chance. He's on a big major pay-per-view card in Dallas, Texas. Do not wear a Philadelphia Eagles jersey to the ring. Get the crowd to like you, not boo you. But Mike's a good kid. He's a good young fighter. I've met him at a couple events, and I've given him my card. I would like to see maybe if I can touch base him at the next fight card I go to. I've seen him fight on a couple occasions, and he is a very good prospect. He's tall, 5'11", 147 pounds. He's got good power in both hands, but he's a very good boxer. He's got fast hands, and he's actually ranked in the top five by the WBO now. So I don't think he's ready on the Pacquiao Mayweather Mosley level yet, or like those names, but he's definitely ready to step up in class, and we'll see how he does this weekend. And, maybe it's time for him to start looking at, getting, some bigger names on his resume.
All righty then. Well, we're going to try Rick Vardell again here. See if we can get the guy on here. Forget what it was.
Nothing.
He must be out on a call.
I'd be busy.
Hey.
Hi, this is Rick.
Hey, Rick. This is Rabble Rousing Rich from the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. How's it going?
Oh, good, man. How you doing?
Great. We're also on the line with Tony the Tornado Pentacal.
What's up?
All right. Hey, how's it going?
Doing good. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing good. Thank you.
All right. Well, as we were mentioning earlier, you got a fight coming up against pretty much your arch nemesis here, the last guy to beat you. When's that coming up, and what can you tell us about it?
Yes, I do. I have a fight coming up on the 13th, so it'll be Saturday, November 13th. I lost him in 02. I was very, very green, and I've learned a lot now, and it's going to be a different outcome. I'm going to give him a pretty good beating.
All right.
So you've waited 8 years for this. I mean, are you chomping at the bit for Saturday night?
Yeah, I didn't know that Dan and I would ever fight again. Like I said, he challenged me. He was trying to get the belt. I assumed he'd probably stay down another class and do something different, fight some other guys. But he kept barking, so they called me, and I said, absolutely. I'd love to avenge that loss. I didn't know that ever happened, so I'm ready.
All right. Is that Tony?
Oh, I'm hearing a busy signal.
Yeah, that's Tony's line. We lost him there for a second. I'm trying to get him back.
Okay. I thought I lost you guys on hope.
Ah, Tony's line for some reason.
Hey, back on?
Hey, what happened there? You started beeping like you were busy.
No, I didn't beep. I just wanted my phone disconnected.
Oh. All right. Well, that's why it happened. But anyway, Rick, tell us a little bit about this whole Gladiator Challenge organization, and how did you get this super heavyweight title?
I was introduced to Gladiator Challenge years ago. It's been around probably for 10 or 12 years now, and I had a good friend of mine fighting 8 years ago. I went to one of his shows and he said, hey, you want to do this? And I said, sure, I'll do it. So I took the next fight, which was 3 months later, and I had an injury, so I didn't get to train for very much of the time, but I still took the fight, and I lost to Dan. It's a great show, and it continued on. I kind of got out of it for a while and did a few other things. I competed in arm wrestling, and then I got back into it. About 3 years ago, they called me for another, the owner, Ted Williams, called me for an X-Arm, which is another fight organization, a little bit different style. And then they offered me a fight in the cage. I said, nah, I don't think I was interested at the time. I had so much going on. They called again, so I finally said, let's do it. So I got in the cage, and won a fight and went for the belt, took the belt, and defended the belt, and just kept going from there. So it's been about 2.5 years, real steady. So I've been training hard.
And is this true in this article I'm reading? You're 47 years old?
Yeah.
Well, good on you.
I've kept myself in good shape. I've trained hard for a long time, and I don't feel 47. I feel more like 37.
All right. Well, I always like to hear that because I'm about 33 now, and I'm trying to get back into boxing myself. So guys like you prove that it can be done. Even
it can be done. That's right.
I'm still.
It's not how old you are. It's how old you feel. But I'd be better if it was how old you act.
That's right. It's the tougher part, you know, injuries and stuff linger a little longer for us, and as you get a little older, but, you know, when I feel healthy, I'm healthy. But if I ding something, I feel it takes a little longer to recover, but that's really the only thing that I feel. I feel good.
All right. Well, that's the most important part. Now, do you have a favorite style of submission that you go to when you get into a fight more often than anything else?
I just have real good ground control. Dan fought me 8 years ago and thinks my ground game is horrible. He has no idea. My ground game is very good. My stand-up's good. I said it was a long time ago when we fought, so he disrespects me all the way around, but he'll find out differently on Saturday. My stand-up is very good, and my ground game is excellent. I have good ground control with a good ground and pound.
All right. And how did you first get involved in fighting in the first place?
I had friends that were fighting, and watched them and went and trained with them to help them for fights, and thought, hey, I'm going to try this myself. And I've been doing Kung Sudo and martial arts for years, but that's far from getting in the cage. So I'd already had some with my hands and feet, but it was nothing like cage fighting. Then I was introduced to it, so I took the fight with Dan, and that's the fight that I'd lost. But that was 8 years ago, and then I just kind of kept staying with it a little bit here and there, but not really training hard. And then 2.5 years ago, I stepped back into it and trained very hard. So I've been training hard for quite some time now.
All right. And what's he been doing since then?
Dan?
Yes, he's been fighting steady since then?
I believe he's been fighting. I've seen several fights. So he's had a few good fights. He's had a couple losses that I didn't think he would do because he is a good fighter with a real good, strong willpower, determined to win. But he did lose a couple that I thought he was going to actually win. But he's been fighting all along, so he has quite a few fights. I'm not even sure what his record is, but he's got a lot. He's got more fights than I do. So he's definitely a good opponent.
All right. Well, sounds like it's going to be a good fight. Now, looking forward, what is your ultimate goal with the sport?
I want to hold on to the belt. I want to fight for a couple more years, hold the belt, and when I get ready to retire, I want to do it on my terms, not somebody finishing me. So my goal is to, when I get ready for a fight, I train hard. I'll be 100% when I fight, and I want to keep the belt. When I find that it's time, then I'll let the belt go and let the guys continue on, but I don't want it taken from me.
All right. Go ahead, Jimmy.
No, same. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, going out and, like, I watch a lot of these fighters today, and I know Rich and I argue about it sometimes, like, for a while, because I follow a lot of boxing. I've been involved in boxing, as I was saying earlier on the show, for almost 17 years now as an active participant in some way or another, as a fighter, as a trainer, reporter, whatever I do. But I've been a fan, since I was a little kid, still in diapers. And there were times that, a fight would be coming up, and I would, or a fight would happen, a big title fight. And one of the fighters who, going into the fight, like, I don't think this guy should be getting this title fight. I think he's past his prime. And the fighter would lose, lose in dramatic fashion. And I would say, Rich, we would debate. And I'm like, it's time for this guy to, hang it up, call it a career. The health is more important. And Rich is like, well, no, you got to give him another chance. The important thing is, if you can be smart enough and be, taken care of well enough where you're doing good, you can go out on your own terms and go out on top. I mean, that's the greatest thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do. I won't just stick around and get beat up. I'll know when it's time, and I want to leave. I'm hoping on my terms. So I feel very confident, and if I wasn't confident and feel like I was in great shape, I wouldn't fight. I'm smart enough to know that there's more to life than going out there and getting beat up. So I feel good. I feel confident. This fight's mine.
All right. And is there any fighter out there that you follow a lot? You like to watch their fights?
Not one particular fighter. There's a lot of good fighters. I watch a lot of guys, and I love the sport. So you know, right now, kind of my big the guy that I love is Brock Lesnar. Obviously, he's a big, strong heavy like myself, and I was a little disappointed when he lost, you know, a couple weeks ago, but because I feel like he's the guy with the best weapons and just needs to fine-tune some stuff. So he's the guy to really follow. If I was to pick one fighter right now, it'd be Brock.
Yeah, his big weakness is found out is the boxing game, I think. He just doesn't have the reach for it, unfortunately. You know, but he's got the muscles for everything else and the endurance. And he's been a wrestler, so it's like he's almost the total package, but it seems like he just hasn't developed his boxing enough. You know,
he hasn't developed it, but I think he's got all the tools. If he just would get everything in the right place, he would be the guy to beat. But he's green. He's just, you know, these other guys have a lot of years, and he's got a couple years in it, so pretty awesome that he went as far as he did with just the amount of time that he's been fighting.
Right, yeah, it's going to be interesting, I guess, to see Kimbo, too, cross over to boxing now. It's his plan. But there's also talk that he's going to be on Survivor, so I don't know if that's going to be anytime soon he's going to be boxing. But, you know, we had this whole discussion, too, when I had gone out to Worcester to see Marius Pudzianowski there fight Tim Sylvia. And he is the former world's strongest man. So that was a super heavyweight fight if I ever saw one. But Pudzianowski, you know, he's all muscle. I know those are completely different sports. I mean, he had some fighting experience in some minor tournaments, but he was just too jacked up. You know, the muscles, as soon as the lactic acid got in his muscles, it was like, forget about it. You know, he couldn't grapple with Sylvia, and Sylvia just manhandled him. So it was an interesting fight, and it brought up the whole topic of, like, how do you change that type of muscle? You know, when you built that muscle that Brock had, he built pretty much that muscle for professional wrestling to look good more than for function. And the fast twitch muscles that you need to strike and punch, you just don't have when you're concentrating on the way your body looks instead of the function. So I don't know. I don't know what body type you are, but have you seen that with a lot of guys in MMA? They try to get into it because they're jacked up and not necessarily because they have functionality in their muscles.
Yeah, that's true. They've got to build more endurance, just kind of work on endurance. And if you're big and strong, that's a plus, but you've got to have some endurance. So all the work you do is more endurance stuff, a lot of high reps, and really work on that. So, and I work on that a lot. I'm also a big guy myself, so, but I have good endurance. So that's where Dan thinks I'm not going to have endurance. I'm going to gas right away. I'm not going to gas. I'm going to be there.
Right. Well, I know the science has changed completely, tremendously since the Ali era, but I heard actually at one point that Angelo Dundee told all of his fighters that you do not lift weights because it shortens your reach. So I always never tried to bulk up. You know, I just tried to do the exercises and the fighting moves and stuff like that. And if anything, to develop muscle, I do the push-ups and sit-ups and stuff. You know? But I don't know if necessarily as true as it used to be or as he thought it was.
Well, I kind of agree with that in boxing, but this isn't boxing. This is MMA, and you're going to hit the ground, and strength is a huge factor. You could take the greatest jiu-jitsu guy in the world, and if he's a lot smaller and doesn't have the strength, I'll shut down all of his moves. As your guy gets bigger and better, then that's obviously harder to do. But it is a big factor to be strong when you hit the ground, and this sport is at least 50% on the ground. So you do need strength. That's the difference. A lot of good long strikers get taken to the ground. They don't have the strength there and can get dominated. So the boxing, I absolutely agree with you. But they're going to be on the ground at some point.
Right, yeah. Well, it's pretty interesting. But going back to your area of expertise there in this Gladiator Challenge, tell us a little bit more about this event that you're going to be a part of coming up on Saturday.
Oh yeah, this is a real great. They have a real nice venue up there, Red Hawk. There'll probably be 16 fights of all different weight classes, and there'll be three, maybe four belt fights, and it should be a really good show. There's a good variety of good fighters in the show. I can't think of them all right now, but this should really be nice. I feel that I'm in great shape for my fight, so I'll be the co-main event. And the main event is going to be a great fight also. It's a real tough fight at the 185ers. So we should have a real good show.
Cool. And what is the cage set up like? Is it a circle or is it an octagon?
No, it's more than octagon. Yeah, more of an octagon. It's not a large cage. I'd say that octagon is something like maybe 18 feet, where I don't know what UFC is, but it's quite a bit larger. It's almost twice the size. So this is a much, much smaller enclosure.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of places have you gone to with this Gladiator Challenge group?
Most of them have been reservations, Indian reservations. Calusa has a nice venue there. I went to Kanakai, been to Red Hawk. And Gladiator Challenge also has them in other places that I haven't fought in yet. They have them in Elko, Nevada, down in Saboba, California. He does shows all over, so Tiff does a real good job with this organization. I've just been fighting up here on the northern end of it, but there are other places, and I'll be traveling to those. Eventually, when I get the call for that, I'll go to another venue.
All right. And what's been your toughest fight so far, other than obviously if it was a tough fight against this guy you're fighting coming up here?
You know, one of my toughest fights probably was Dan early on because I was so green and, didn't really know what to do and how to get out of certain situations. But when I won the belt, I fought a very large man, Grizz, Ross Clifton. And he's a good opponent. He was about 6'8", 375 pounds, a big man to take down, and it took a lot to finish him. I hit him with a lot of shots and tried to control him and put some good leather on him, some elbows on him, and it was hard to finish him. So that was a pretty good fight. It took a lot of energy to finish a guy that big.
Now, the last MMA guy we had on here, too, I asked him about this certain trend that I'm noticing on a lot of the latest UFC cards and a lot of the MMA cards, period. I don't know if it's necessarily a factor on the other circuits outside the UFC and Strikeforce and stuff, but the televised stuff I'm watching seems like there's more of an emphasis now on the striking than there ever was. I mean, whether it's the crowd wanting to see that and not wanting to allow the ref not to stand people up, you know, like the beginning of MMA, when I'd go out to a fight, people would always be yelling, "Stand him up, ref," or "Break him up," you know, when they're up against the cage. And over the years, I've noticed that's gotten to be less and less of an issue. And lately, on the grand stage, it seems like they're really throwing it in your face, and it's getting to the point where these guys are really concentrating so much more on the striking, whether it's by nature or design. And the last guy we had on the show said it's all about putting on a show. That's how you rise through the ranks and get noticed. But I was wondering your perspective on that. Do you see that a lot happening, more striking?
Yeah, there is definitely more striking. I think guys, they want to show they have the better hands. They get the biggest right hand, biggest left hand, the biggest punch. So most knockout power. I do see that more. Just what you saw with Shane Carwin and Brock Lesnar, you know, Shane says he's so heavy-handed, so Brock wants to stand with him to beat him in his own game. So, yeah, it is more for the fans because that big knockout versus being on the ground, and that can sometimes get a little slow and a little hard to find the chokes, and maybe one of the submissions that takes some time and it gets a bit boring. So, but the stand-up's not very boring. You're throwing, you're slinging, someone's going to go down. So I know that Dana put some pretty good bonus money out there, so I'm sure they're going to get the biggest knockout and some of the stuff that he's trying to get them to achieve to get that action. So I'm sure a lot of it's coming from that. In the big show, you get that, and then it kind of leaks its way on down. But stand it, everyone loves it. And when the guys start slinging them, the whole crowd stands up. So it's pretty exciting to watch a big knockout.
Yeah. Yeah, that's he mentioned that too, the bonus money. And
yeah,
I don't know if that's a good idea, you know. I mean, obviously it's a good idea for the fans and the crowd, but for the fighters themselves, I don't know if they should be, you know, motivated in that area. Not just because, you know, they could get more hurt from striking or whatever, you know, but just they shouldn't be influenced one way or the other at all. You know, they should just go in to fight their fight, not to try to be trying to win a bonus for something. And the other thing,
I totally agree. If I was going to go fight for on Brock Lesnar, going to go fight for the UFC heavyweight championship, and I thought the guy could knock me out, and I knew I could take him down and submit him, I would forget the bonus money and keep my belt. But if I thought I could stand with him and had the advantage, I'd give the show a crowd and try to get bonus money also. But I would never put my belt in jeopardy over bonus money, because the longevity of keeping that belt was going to pay off a lot more than that little bonus money that night.
Well, the other thing, too, is the idea that, you know, you're going to give this one guy who fought just as hard as another guy who won this bonus money, you know? When, who decides? You know, how is it decided? And one guy could get, like, $10,000 because he's on the undercard or whatever, but he puts together the best performance of the night that nobody sees. Why doesn't he get the bonus, you know? Why don't they put him on TV and give him the bonus? And that happens a lot. But they're going to, no, they're going to give it to the guys who are the main event fighters. And it creates that favoritism type of situation there where I don't know if it's necessarily a good idea. I mean, a lot of people say it works. Like you just mentioned that it seems to be working, but is it a real good idea? Not all good ideas, just because they work, are good. You know?
But, yeah, that's true. I just think he wants to keep the energy level up so that you get, you know, because it's in the big show there, you know, those pay-per-views are kind of spendy, so if you feel like you're not getting a bang for your buck, you're going to stop buying the show. So he wants to get the most, get the energy out of the guys. You're right. It's hard to find who's right or who's wrong, but he's trying something, and at least he's putting more money in the fighters' pockets, and that's tough. Those guys, you know, they work pretty hard for their money, and they don't get to fight that often. So they got to make some change, because if that's all they're doing, it's pretty tough living.
Right. Well, at the same time, they're cracking down on some of the sponsors, too. They're throwing certain sponsors out for their name or because they compete with their own product. You know, so I could talk all day about the corruption of the UFC, but basically, my main concern overall in all of MMA is the fighter pay, and it's one of those things that we always talk about when we bring up the boxing versus MMA debate. It's not so hot anymore, but it was when Dana and Floyd Mayweather were, you know, making comments back and forth to each other about who could be who, the best boxer, the best MMA fighter. But, you know, it's still an issue, it seems. And like I said, some cards, you got a guy fighting for $10,000 and he just trained for 3 months. And, you know, he's going to have to rely on his sponsors and all that sort of thing. So have you found that to be an issue? Have you been paid pretty well?
Yeah, pretty well. You know, we don't make the money that UFC fights, and usually what they'll do, they'll give you a purse, or they'll give you a percentage of your tickets if you've got a pretty good fan base, and I have a pretty good fan base, so I take percentage, and I do pretty well. But I mean, I couldn't do it and make a living at it unless I fought more often, or I mean, have to move up to a bigger organization. This is definitely the farm of it. You know, we're the feeder to find the good fighters, but it's not something, it's pretty hard to be full-time in our particular league, but it still pays good. It's fun, and it still has a pretty good paycheck, but I couldn't make a living. I'd have to move on to Strikeforce and then on to UFC. So it still does a pretty good job. Ted's doing the best he can to make this show happen and put some money in the fighters' pockets to keep them motivated.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear, you know. It's got to start at a grassroots level anyway, you know, and you have to have these other organizations out there keeping the big dogs on their toes, too.
So,
there are still some competitors out there in Strikeforce and some of the other companies. Like Bellator, I guess there's rumors that it's not doing so well, but I'm not sure. They're not one of the biggest opponents of the UFC, too. But I don't know. It just seems to me like you see a lot of these guys, they just don't get paid what they're worth. And the UFC, the numbers are always published after the fights, how much each guy gets paid. And I look at it sometimes and I go, why does this guy deserve $300,000 and this guy's getting 10 grand? You know, where's the justice in that? You know, this guy's just as good a fighter. He's been around just as long. And I just don't get it sometimes. Boxing has a much more rigorous structure, it seems. And these guys are paid like $5,000 for their first fight sometimes in boxing. So it just kind of makes me wonder, you know, why is they've been able to catch up with that? And especially with the UFC, where these guys are making billions of dollars in their other businesses, you know, you figure they could share the wealth. I know they just bankrupted their casinos, but come on. You know,
you get some of these highly talented boxers, like when they're starting, like turning pro, And you don't get out of the Olympics as much as you used to, because the Olympic, boxing now is such a sham. But when you had a guy like Oscar De La Hoya, won the Olympic gold in 92, I mean, he stepped out and signed a multi-million-dollar contract before, he ever laced up the gloves as a professional. Same thing with a guy like David Reed, when he knocked out, the Cuban in 96. He had his nickname before he even set up a pro fight. They're like, well, I don't know what his nickname was before he got to that, but he became the American Dream, David Reed. Maybe he was no longer Dangerous David or David the Destroyer. He was the American Dream. And he signed a $14 million contract off the bat. His career ended up being a disappointment with eye injuries and all that. But and we've talked about it before, and that's the one thing that really bothers me a lot when we talk about UFC. Now, like I said, I'm more of a boxing guy. I always will be. But you get these UFC cards. You take a major boxing pay-per-view card. Let's just take this weekend, Manny Pacquiao, Antonio Margarito. There's going to be about seven fights on the undercard. Three or four of them will be televised. Those guys on getting that card, they're going to make a nice chunk of change. They might not make the $1 million purse, but they will definitely make five digits. And when I'm talking about five digits, I'm talking about high five digits. I'm talking about, $50,000 or more, most likely. I can't confirm that. But these guys are making a nice chunk of change. The main event fight, Pacquiao, is making millions for this fight, easily. And I'm sure Margarito is taking home seven figures, too. And now, say there's 70,000 paying customers going to be at Texas Stadium, averaging, let's say, $100 a seat. Now, I'm sure it's going to be more than that. With the seats going as a couple thousand, so we'll say $200 a seat times 70,000. That's my math's not that good, but that's a couple million, right there. And then with the concessions, the pay-per-view buys, that'll be enough to cover everything. Now, you get these UFC fights, they're still selling out a lot of arenas. And they're getting, a lot of buys on, pay-per-view. Where is this money going? And I'll tell you right now, I think most of it's going in Dana White's pocketbook. I mean, that's just me being brutally honest. I think
it's like a certain percentage, though. I mean, obviously he gets a salary to be the president, probably, but he really makes a certain percentage out of the UFC, and his percentage just went down because they sold an interest in it. So the Fertittas are the ones that make the most money. And the big problem.
Okay, then Fertittas is then. Okay. You might be right. I mean, maybe the guy that's the mouthpiece.
Really, what does he do? He's a mouthpiece. Why aren't his fighters making as much as he does? There should be a fighter that makes as much as he does. If they have good contracts and they have a more competitive system like boxing does. But, I mean, it is still a sport that's growing, so I understand that aspect of it. But these guys, I know the numbers behind the Fertittas. They just paid $700 million to get their casinos back out of bankruptcy, So they got the money laying around. It's like, they buy $28 million houses just a drop of a dime sometimes, these guys. So to pay a fighter $1 million on a main event, I don't understand why they can't do it. But I haven't seen it yet. I think Brock Lesnar got something like $400,000 his last fight, and that was high, And they're paying for his star power too, because he came from wrestling, not just because he's a UFC champion. But it's just something I see. I don't know if it really affects some of the other leagues at a lower level, but I've seen guys fight just as hard at that level and get paid $600 or $700. In Massachusetts, when I used to go to the fights a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
But outside of that, what do you do when you're getting ready for a fight? What's the most important thing you do when you're in training?
For me, it's diet and just training hard. Keep your cardio good. Make sure your diet is good, lean, and I stay pretty lean. I weigh about 275, 280, and I'm very lean. I'm about 10% body fat. So it's important to me to fuel my body with the right stuff.
All right. And is there anybody that throughout your career you looked up to as an idol or helped you out a lot?
No, just a lot of guys throughout the time. I haven't really picked one particular person that's really been there. Guys come and go, and you learn a little bit from this guy, learn a little bit from this guy, and then pretty soon you start putting it all together, and you get quite a bit of arsenal there. But it's hard. I don't have just one particular guy that's really caught me a ton or that's really always been there. It's just along the way, you just get different people and learn a little more, and just keeps you going.
Cool. And what do you love most about mixed martial arts, just being a part of it, you know?
I like just the whole excitement of it, in a fight, your crowd, I sell a lot of tickets to a lot of my fans, and then when you win, the feeling is really, really awesome. Just a really good feeling that everyone's just proud of you, all your hard work you put in. It is a lot of hard work, and it's, you see the fight, you see 3 to 4, maybe 10 minutes, but it's not the months of hard training, so it pays off when your fans are out there and they're just, you're loving them, and you know, they love you, and it's an awesome feeling when you get your hand raised after a hard fight that you put so much time into, and no one really thinks about it. You know, I've trained all the way up now 2.5 months, and they're going to see me fight on the 13th, and that fight's not going to last all that long, one way or the other. I feel I'm going to dominate him, but if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I feel very confident it's not going to go that long. I put a ton of hard work in. They don't see that, but it's awesome to get that win and you know, feel all the energy from them. They'll come flying out of their seats, and it's an awesome feeling.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one thing that, you know, the money issue kind of gets faded into the background, because it seems like, you know, many, many more times than you see in boxing, these guys aren't just fighting for the money. It's obvious they're fighting for more than that. They're fighting for the excitement of the crowd, the opportunity to just, you know, have people talk about you, say, oh, yeah, did you see that fight? And, you know, see what that guy did? And just little things like that is just so important to people. And that shows you the real true heart of a fighter. It goes in there and just does it, not for the benefits or the cash or the contract. They just do it to fight. And, that's the good aspect of it. You know, even though they should still get taken care of one way or another, financially, it's nice to see that these guys still do it. Just for the guts and the glory.
Yeah, that's really the good part about it. It's, you know, money's always nice, but it's you love to look out there and just see your fans come out of their seat and clapping, and they're all smiling and yelling, and it's really crazy. When I was winning the belt, I had the guy down, and my corner was yelling to me, telling me what to do, and they actually had this. I'm probably 2 feet from the fence. They're up against it screaming. I couldn't hear them. The crowd was so loud that all I could see was the lips were moving, trying to tell me what to do, how to pin an arm down, and I'm still in control of the fight, but you still want to listen to your corner. It's very important. They've trained you for 3 months for the fight. They can see stuff you're not thinking. When you're in there, you don't see it. And I couldn't even hear them. It's just so loud. And that's exciting. And when you finish and the ref pulls you off, the excitement, it is really, really a good feeling. So I think that's what I do it for more than anything else, is just the awesome feeling you get out of it, and you get a lot of respect, and you earn it. You know, it's, you know, just, it just doesn't come that easy. You work hard for it.
Cool. Well, is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or thank or anything like that?
I'd like to thank my coaches. I've got some great coaches, Nick Shadwick and Tyson Scholl and Kyle Bendis. They've been awesome. They've helped me along the way. I couldn't have done it without them. So I want to thank them and thank all my fans. I love them all. And I'm gonna prove it to them Saturday night that my hard work's gonna pay off.
All right, cool. And any predictions on that? You're gonna knock him out? You're gonna submit him? What's your plan?
I will finish him. I'll take him out in the first round. It'll be a little stand up and ground and pound, and I'll finish him with a submission in the first round.
All right.
Nice.
Well, I don't know if I'll be
able to. I don't know. We might have him start doing some predictions now for us.
Tony does these predictions all the time on the fights, the previews and analysis of who's going to win. And he actually predicted a couple of MMA fights, too. He put me to shame. I'm the MMA guy.
Oh, okay.
So it's usually like, you know, he just sticks to boxing and I stick to MMA, but, you know, I was too caught up in the James Toney hype. I picked James Toney to beat Randy Couture like an idiot. You know?
And I laughed at him. I laughed in his face that styles make fights, and James Toney will never be a good MMA fighter. He's like, his fighting style is, you know, especially as he's gotten older now, he's very slow-paced. I said, you know, when he's being in the boxing ring, he likes to just, you know, get in real close, let the guy kind of lay on him, throw little counter punches, not move his feet, not really do much of anything. I said, in an MMA environment, he's going to fail miserably. The guy's going to take him, I think Couture's going to take him right down. I said, he's going to let him get in close. He's not going to be able to defend against the leg takedown. And he's going to get destroyed. Rich said, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. And he was right.
Yeah. If you would have had a stand-up guy, if you'd have fought more of a stand-up guy, James Toney could have possibly had a better fight, but no way.
You know what? You're ready for that.
Yeah.
James Toney, especially earlier in his career, before he put on a lot of weight, you know, James Toney was never a heavyweight. James Toney, his problem was, even when he was starting off in his championship level at 160 pounds, was always killing himself to make weight because he had no discipline. He was always, you know, they said, like, he was always taking diuretics and he was always doing whatever he could to make weight because he was killing himself because he was always running out, grabbing a Big Mac or grabbing a Whopper, eating candy, French fries, and all that shit. Then he's killing himself to make weight. So he got up to, like, we're heavyweight, there's no weight limit. Well, shit, you know, doesn't matter if I weigh 220 or 240 or 280. Heavyweight's a heavyweight. And that's why he was around, like, 230, 238. And he just, you know, just looked terrible. And you could tell his work in the boxing field really suffered over the last few years because he was just so immobile and he was just so lackadaisical out there. I said, you put him in where a guy's going to be able to take him down, he's done. You're right. If a guy had more of a stand-up game and he could do his counter punches on that, yeah, maybe he'd have a chance. But in the ground game, hell no.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I call them a whale out of water in my play-by-play report.
Yeah.
That's what he looked like when he was on the ground. He was flopping around in his back like he didn't know what to do.
Yeah, it was not good. But Randy's a stud.
Yeah, he is. Well, Randy's a guy that's it's in your age group, actually. So that's
for sure.
A role model for you. You know,
absolutely.
But at that age, Bernard Hopkins is a guy in boxing who does it in his 40s.
Bernard's got a title fight coming up in a couple of weeks. He's still, you know, out there. Going to be, I think, 46 this January, and he's fighting for a world title in, I think, it's about a month.
Yes, that's impressive.
And when Evander Holyfield first started his latest comeback, too, he used to always say in his interviews, age ain't nothing but a number.
Yeah, hey, very true. But going back to that, when we were talking about James Toney, you know, and his failure out there, the one thing, and I said this to Rich on a number of occasions, I see certain fighters that I think could be good in an octagon type of environment, and those are guys that are very offensive type fighters, and I'm talking about guys like Mike Tyson in his prime, I think would have done relatively well because he was so fast and so explosive that, you know, he maybe would have been, even guys trying to take him down, if he could have caught him coming in, it would have been lights out. Other guys that I think could do very well, maybe the Klitschkos because of their size, as long as they don't let anybody in close to them, or guys that are explosive puncher types, guys that are, you know, like slower counterpunch types, I don't think, you know, would very well. And then on the reverse end, guys from MMA that I think could do very well in boxing. Brock Lesnar obviously wouldn't be one of them. He doesn't have a great stand-up game. He's a very powerful guy. He's a ground guy. But a lot of your guys that are pure strikers, they have an absolute possibility of doing very well. It's like apples to oranges. It's like what kind of apple is going to survive in an orange patch and what kind of orange is going to survive on an apple tree?
Yeah, I agree.
All right, well, Rick, it's been great talking to you tonight. We're going to let you go. We got a couple MMA things to talk about and wrap up the show, but it's been great having you on. And
well, thank you very much.
I'll try somehow to watch your fight. I don't know if your PR guy can forward it to me somehow. But,
hopefully we can, and I'm hoping someone will get it on YouTube, so it should be a good fight.
Well,
good luck to you on Saturday, Rick.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We'll see
you. Okay, guys, we'll see you later. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
So he's going to try to be the Avenger this weekend. We'll see if he succeeds, if it's on YouTube. But anyway, like I said, we do have some MMA to talk about. We've got, of course, the big UFC 122, you know, coming up this weekend, this Saturday, free on Spike. And the main event is Nate Marquardt versus Yushin Okami. And these guys are very well-rounded. Marquardt is 33-9 with two draws, which is a very impressive record for MMA. Okami is obviously Japanese. He's 26-5, and he's got a 2-inch height advantage, and his reach isn't even listed, but looks like they got pretty similar reach. It should be an interesting fight. You know, you've seen a lot of these guys from Japan and Pride come over to the UFC, and they just they don't compete as well. They don't do as well, and I think it's like it's kind of like a scenario where, you know, they really wanted to crush and take over Pride, and the guys that they did bring in seem like they get beat up a lot. You know, they get thrown in against guys that they know can beat them. So I'm thinking Nate Marquardt is the favorite in this one, and Yushin Okami is going to be coming in with something to prove. But he's a big name. I mean, Okami's been around a long time, and he's got a lot of experience. So you can never really predict those type of fights. And I think it's a good main event. It's like, you know, the UFC every now and then has these fights. It seems like, you know, there's a whole card full of people that nobody really follows and doesn't have they don't have a huge fan base, but it's just a bunch of guys that have been around forever, and they just throw them together, and, you know, they've been on undercards before, now they're on main events because it's a free show, or they're the only guys who would agree to go to Germany or whatever the story is, but it's going to be a good card. And you got a guy making another comeback, Jorge Rivera, who's from the Boston area. We've seen him at a couple of shows. And he's fighting another old school guy, Alessio Sicara. And Rivera is 18-7. And Sicara is 19-7. He's got one no contest. And they're pretty much the same height, right around 6 feet. I think Rivera's got a little bit of reach on him, but not much. So that should be a good fight. And you get some old guys from the Ultimate Fighter shows. This card seems to be heavily stacked with those guys. Dennis Seaver, I don't think was on any Ultimate Fighter show, but he's fighting a guy who was on the UK versus US episode or season, Andre Winner. Seaver is 16-7 at 155, and Winner is 12-4 with one draw. And we got Amir Sadala, who is an Ultimate Fighter guy. He actually won one of the seasons. He's 4-2, and he's fighting a guy 8-3, Peter Sabota, at 170. And Sadala's been pretty impressive since he came into the UFC, so it should be great. And we got another couple guys who have been around forever. At least one guy, Krzysztof Soszynski. Is 20-11 at 205, fighting Goran Reljic, who is 8-2. And then we got Kyle Noak, a guy from the last heavyweight season of the Ultimate Fighter, fighting Rob Kimmins. Kimmins is 23-5, Noak is 17-4. That's going to be at 185 pounds, that fight. Then we got Vladimir Matyushenko, 24-5, fighting Alexandre Ferreira, 18-6 at 205. Then we got not much information about these guys. Pascal Krauss, who doesn't have any record listed on here, and Mark Scanlon, who's 7-0 at 170 pounds. Dwayne Ludwig, guy from the WEC, crossover to the UFC. Now he's 27-11, fighting Nick Oshipchak, who is 5-3. And I don't know if it's going to be 155 or 170, because Oshipchak's listed at 170 and Ludwig's listed at 155 there. So we'll have to see. And then we got the guy to beat Kimbo Slice, the last guy, not the last guy to beat him, but the last guy in Strikeforce to beat him, I guess you could say, Seth Petruzzelli. He had a rough go about his last fight. He was winning the whole thing, and then he just, the tables got turned on him real bad. But he's fighting this time a guy named Carlos Vamola. He's 8-1, big dude, 205. Seth is 14-6. But he's the Kimbo killer, so I guess his reputation is still with him. So they let him stay on. He had a good fight. But then Chris McCray is another Ultimate Fighter winner of the last big season. He's fighting Carlos Eduardo Roca, 8-0, and McCray is 6-1 at 185. That's it for UFC 122. And actually, I think it's going on right now, but there's a, I think it's, not sure if it's the last one, but it's one of the last WEC cards going on, probably in Vegas. I think that's where they have most of theirs. Let me just check it out here. Casino Resort in Vegas. Either it starts at 9:30 or 10. Main events, but it's the undercards have already started there. So WEC 52, Uriah Faber is in the main event versus Mizugaki. I don't even know the guy's first name. But we don't actually have that much for mixed martial arts this weekend. I think there's going to be more boxing, even though we haven't really looked at the boxing schedule either yet. But we have that card tonight. MFC 27 Breaking Point, Extreme Fight Night, Rochelt versus Horwich at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Annihilation 30 in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and we have on Saturday we got Relentless in the Philippines, the National Capital Region, the Philippines. I have in the UFC in Germany. It's in Oberhausen, Germany, free on Spike TV. King of the Door, KOTD, never heard of that one. King of the Door 2 is going on in Auckland, New Zealand on Saturday as well. And we have Cage Contender from Belfast, Ireland. Whoa. Hold on. What happened there? Someone's going down there. And we have a Cage Contender. We just mentioned.
Live, November 20, only on pay-per-view.
Back in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Palm Casino and Resort. We're inside
the... Oh, that's why. All right, so...
You want to advertise it?
No, that was the WEC feed. It's live, so it's on. But as I was saying, going through the schedule, Infusion, King of the Cage, is going on in Las Vegas on Saturday. Face-to-Face 3 on Saturday in Brazil. Then we got a fight in Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland, at the First Mariner Arena Shogun Fight 3. But surprisingly, this week, there are no fights listed here in Tokyo or Japan whatsoever. No Sunday fights, just Saturday. And that's it. That's the whole list of MMA fights coming up this weekend. But as far as WEC goes, the results so far, he's had 6 fights. Eve Jabouin just beat Brandon Vischer, unanimous decision. We had Cub Swanson beat Mackenzie Sommerzier by split decision. And Michael McDonald beat Clint Godfrey by submission, armbar. Dustin Poirier beat Zachary Micklewright by TKO in the first round. Anthony Giuquani beat Edward Filoto by TKO elbow strike in the second round. And Rafael Asuncayo beat LC Davis by unanimous decision. And that's going on right now. And going to watch it in mute. So you know what's going to happen, going on. If I see anything big. But it's going to be one of the last WEC events, so say goodbye to them.
Bye.
Bye, WEC. They're going to be rolled into the UFC. So they're not going to be gone. All the fighters are supposedly going over with them. They're not going to crush their own league to build something better, but they are going to probably have to do a lot differently. And if you go over to opposingviews.com, you can actually read an article I wrote about the merger and how good it's going to be. I think it's probably the best move for them at this point, and they kind of had already done some preliminary attempts to basically integrate the sport, the two leagues, by having some of the WEC guys move up to higher weights in the UFC and see how they do, and they all did very well. So we think it's going to be a good idea, and it's going to bring two new weight classes, featherweight, bantamweight. So you're going to have a more worldwide appeal in general for the sport of mixed martial arts, seeing as the big dog is now going to have these two lighter weights. In a lot of these countries, you know, these guys, they're light. You know, the national population is a very low weight, so it's going to open the sport up to a lot of different people and put these lighter guys on the main stage, which a lot of them should be on, and it hasn't been yet. And I had even said, you know, you ought to make not just WEC pay-per-views, but you ought to just outright bring some of these guys to WEC if you're going to keep it separate and just throw them on a UFC card just to see what happens. They didn't go that far. Guys kind of elevate up through the ranks and where it happened. But the WEC guys really did well from what I saw. The last guy to go in there, I think, was this guy's name. This is one of the last big UFC cards. He went in there and just dominated. So I think it'll be a good idea. And of course, we're also going to have new episodes of a new seasons of the Ultimate Fighter show with the bantamweights and featherweights. So we'll be able to see the grand stage competing, but we'll also get to see a lot of the young up and coming guys featured on that show. So all in all, I think it's a great idea, and we'll see how it gets executed on the first day of the new year. New Year's Day, there's going to be a big UFC card where all these guys are going to get featured. Of course, the guy that I hold responsible for making sure I never go into MMA, Jose Aldo, and Tom Swanson, the guy I just mentioned, who actually won tonight in the WEC, was the guy who beat in 18 seconds. It's Jose Aldo, just destroyed him and hit him with a flying knee and got six punches after that. And I saw that fight, I swore I would never. Well, not that I actually fought it. You know, I just kind of tried a couple moves here and there. I might actually do it on a couple. So, they have to convince me otherwise. Other than that, I really don't have too much to go by. And let's check out real quick, see what we got going on there. Also on the 24/7 episodes, there was a lot of stuff about Margarito's training camp, of course, and something that is a little bit different about the two camps. You know, Manny Pacquiao is such an established boxer; he's got such a good training set. He comes into camp business; it's all business, and I think there was a little bit of a different story in Margarito's camp. They had not only the scene where they were joking around with the hand wrap situation, but they also had one where they were talking about how, Margarito's wife is always in the training camp with him and sitting there in the corner watching all the time. I mean, not there. She's always there. So we were talking about how she's resilient and she can take, you know, some of the crap that she sees and whatever. And so they go to the scene where Margarita's getting, he lights up the room with this huge fart, you know, and you can hear it on camera and everything. And his wife starts gagging. I mean, she's laughing about it, but at the same time, she's like, I guess it really sunk or whatever the hell he's eating to stay so thin. Started to come out of my way, but it just seemed like it was a lot more act. Like they had a prank going on with one of the trainer's cars. I don't know if that necessarily happens. I think it's just a little weird to have your wife around all the time while you're training. And Manny Pacquiao seems to have that figured out. You know, he has his time with his wife. And as we heard from Freddie Roach last week, he doesn't have sex before a fight. So I don't think he's going to want to have his wife around in the training room and even be tempted when he's getting close to a fight. His wife is pretty hot, I have to admit. And another funny thing about the, it's funny, you talked about this Michael Cox guy before who is a Bob Arum guy, and he's come across 24/7 episodes in the past as a real scumbag. And reports about him have made him out to be a real scumbag, and I think he's a scumbag. He's really grown up. Still everywhere Pacquiao goes, and he's in the thing there. They just all of a sudden one night decide to announce that they're going to have an engagement party. There he is with a Filipino bride all of a sudden. So I'm like, what is this, an arranged marriage? Who would marry that guy? He's not talking Filipino yet, I don't think, but there was one story I read that Manny Floor at one point on everywhere for Bob Arum to be his advisor.
Congratulations. You've been selected to receive a $1 Walmart gift card.
Whoa. Congratulations. I'm going to talk, obviously. Whoa. So, hell of a mismatch of the week in Colombia. Alvi Sierra, 7 goals, 15 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Adrian Palencia, 1-2. Losses by knock. Well, we have a pretty interesting fight in Germany tomorrow night at middleweight between Benjamin Simon, 19-1 with 18 knockouts, fighting Zolt Noxai, who's 41-10 with 31 for the IBF Intercontinental Middleweight title. Also on that card, we have a very, you know, fight. Jennifer Seventh fighting Danielle Smith, 1 for the vacant IBF title. We have the Jesus fight of the week, and none other than Mexico, going to be on Telem. And we got Jesus, 28-3, with 8 pounds, 2 draws, fighting Julio David Rook, who is 30-7, 18 knockouts. And this is for the interim WBT Pino bantamweight title, because those guys are definitely Latino. So have another mismatch of the week. Jose Angel Barranza, 33-19, 2 draws, 26 counts, fighting Fernando Salazar, who is 2-9. Jesus, that's bad. This guy got more than 50 fights, fighting a guy with 11 fights, 9 losses. Not good. We'll see how that goes for Fernando. Oh, man. What else do we have? We had a pretty interesting fight in Poland for the Polish International Light Heavyweight title. At risk of making a Polish joke, I'm kind of wondering how you Polish international. If it's Polish, it'd be international. I don't know. Lazuski, 13-0 with four knockouts, is fighting Thomas Adamek.
Yeah, I saw that.
16-3. Let's come back. That's screwing with us here. Thomas Adamek from the Czech Republic. Czech Adamek. Definitely not the same guy. Imagine anybody on his fight. I know that the real Thomas Adamek fought. Would the real Thomas Adamek please stand? Alright, and we're in Michigan tomorrow night between Dillingham. I wonder if you see at light heavyweight. 20 with 10 knockouts, fighting Ruben Williams, 29-12 is 16. This is for the vacant, the vacant World Boxing Foundation All America's light heavyweight title.
Oh.
Never heard of that one. It's a first. Heard of Latino titles. All America.
Get this one.
Is that how we're going up now? Take that, Central. We have another fight in America, the United States, in we got Matt Vanda, 43-11, 23 knockouts, fighting Ossie Duran, 24-8, with 9 knockouts on Friday. And also on that card is Gerson Ravello, 20-5 knockouts, versus that always foreigner opponent, TBA, who has an unknown record, unknown skills, and an unknown style. Then we go to Rhode Island on Friday. We got a big fight with Manfredo Jr. back in action. He's 36-19 knockouts, fighting John Berrio, who's 15-7 with 11 knockouts. And it's a 10-round middleweight fight. And we got a 6-round heavyweight fight between Marius Wach, 22-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Galen Brown, who is 14 with 20 knockouts, one draw. See how that goes. And we get to Saturday here. Let's see what we got on Saturday. Not too much. Latvia. I'm just jumping out of here. So we got a pretty interesting fight over here in the Ukraine. If you're in the Ukraine, you can go to the short pace in Kharkov, Ukraine. A light welterweight fight between Serchenko, who's 26-1, and DeMarcus Corley, who is 30-14 with 22 knockouts, one draw, fighting for the vacant WBO European light welterweight title.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know how much Corley's got left, though. You know, he's obviously well past his prime. He's a really good about, you know, he's definitely on the downside. So he's becoming more of like a stepping stone now.
Right. Well, if he's got to go to the Ukraine just to fight, you can tell. Something's not as good as it is. But anyway, whatever goes to a decision, he's going to lose. He's fighting a guy that looks like he's from there, so a chance in the first place. But also a guy who's from there, both guys, I think, are from there. In Manchester, United Kingdom this weekend on Saturday, a big heavyweight fight between new heavyweight David Hay, 24-1 with 22 knockouts, and Odd Harris, 27-4 with knockouts. And he just won one of the most recent heavy prize fighter tournament as well. So Odd coming off some good performances, and David Hay is still new to the division, so to speak. So we're going to see the best come out of both guys in this fight. It might be a more interesting fight than people think. And Audley's got a little bit more experience under his belt, so, you know, and David Hay, although he does only have, you know, the one loss, he hasn't been heavyweight yet, so it's going to be an interesting experiment here. But it's not really one of those fights that's people interested. Of course, it's a UK affair, so the States are interested. And then we go to Arlington, Texas, of course. We talked about the Manny Pacquiao versus Margarito fight, Mike Jones versus Jesus, another Jesus fight of the week. Cross. That's for three different titles, believe it or not. The NABA welterweight title, the WBO NABO welterweight title, and the WBC Continental Americas welterweight title. It's either going to be Jesus or Jones. Wear that belt. We also have kind of a weird match fight here. Guillermo Rigondeaux, 12-round super bantamweight fight, and he's only 6-0. With 5 knockouts, is fighting Ricardo Cordoba, who's 37-2 with 2 draws and 23 knockouts. And this is for the interim WBA World Super Bantamweight title. WBA is a big organization. I'm kind of surprised they're going to let a guy fight for a title who's only 6-0. But it looks like it was kind of thrown on there. Brandon Rios, another guy from the Margarito camp, is going to be fighting on that card at light welterweight. He's 25-18. Knockout Henri Lothar, who's 14-2. Let's see how that goes. I'm definitely going to be late. So then we get to Sunday, and that's just about it. Next Wednesday, we have a pretty interesting fight in Western Australia before we come back on the next show on next Thursday. We got 2 interesting fights, actually. We're going to have to release the McCracken. Anthony McCracken, 13 with 5 knockouts, is fighting a great matchup with Shane Cameron, 25-2 with 20 knockouts. That's for the National Boxing Organization. Asia-Pacific Cruiserweight title. Whoa. But the main event is Danny Green, 30-3 with 27 knockouts, fighting BJ 24-0 with 15 knockouts, 1 draw. And that's for the International Boxing Organization Cruiserweight title. So it's the Asia-Pacific Cruiserweight title and the regular Cruiserweight title on the same card. A lot of heavy-duty action there. Maybe I spoke too soon on the mismatch of the week, too. We've got a fight going on in Tanzania next Wednesday. Rashid Matumla, who's 41-14 with 2 draws, 30 knockouts, fighting Sabiala Med. He's got a Med, in case this fight. But this guy is 3-4. With 1 knockout, and a stellar record, fighting a guy with 30 knockouts. He has 30 times the amount. So I wouldn't put the betting money on the Med guy. That's it. What's your boxing schedule? We got about 10 minutes left. And
well, I mean, we went through a lot of good stuff. I do have some good news, though. I think you'll like. I talked to an old friend of mine. I haven't talked to him in a long time. He's a hell of a nice guy. One of the guys, when I first started out in the boxing game, back in 1994, 1995, and I was struggling up at Lock Haven. You know, I was a brawler. I had a whole lot of boxing. Defense. The fastest guy. And well, you know, that's when I started going down to South Philly just by chance. My dad met the one trainer that working job, and when I went down there, a lot of the guys they were looking at me like I was fresh meat. You know, this boy, wait till we get this white boy in the ring. You know, I'm not pretty good. There's 3 guys down there that believe. And, Kevin, the trainer, Adrian, who I'm one of the first guys I sparred with, and this other guy, man, and he
Candyman and I became really good friends, and we used to spar a lot together. We were both around the same height, the same weight. He was more quicker on his hands, a little quicker on his feet. I was more of a slugger. He's a great personality, and what a funny guy. Everybody down there loves him. He's still down there, you know. And, well, I reconnected with him recently. I hadn't talked to him in a couple of years. Well, I sent an email, and I told him that he should be on as a guest one night. Well, he responded, and he'd love to do it, so I'm going to touch base with him and try to get him on there. He's going to date. Well, maybe after Thanksgiving holiday or something. And it'll be good because he's definitely a guy with a great personality. Simon Carr, who was the first guest I ever booked on the show a couple years ago. Simon, a great outgoing personality, the guy that people love to listen to. And, you know, Candy can tell you some real, real old old stories between me and him. So, I'm getting him on. I think
you'll
like having him as a guest.
Cool. Well, we have another exciting potential guest next week that come to pass. And there's a possibility of Glenn Johnson either next week or the week after. But we also have Al Bean in the works. So it's going to be tough to get rid of edgewise when you get us two who love to hog the microphone and Al Byrne, who used to hog in the microphone. But he's the old school boxing guy, and I already told him that you're the MMA, so he's not going to be able to compete. But he emailed me personally because he's got this new website, theboxingchannel.com. And we put it up a little plug a few days ago. It should still be there somewhere.
Check it out.
The Boxing Channel and the color commentator. And so we'll talk to him. He's got a lot of knowledge, and he might put you to the test, Tony, I think.
All right.
Might get you a lot of questions. Just give a shout-out to our sponsors, AntSucks.com. You can check out the reports there. Get a lot of them. Also, Cocaine Energy Drink, drinkcocaine.com. One of our best sponsors, so he's sending us free shipments of cocaine. Gotta love that. And, of course, the Zion sponsor, the one Zion company that we support, is the link on the top of our blog on our main page, unlimitedfightnews.com, to the eBay store of a former Zion shareholder. It's also at the top of the blog, ZionSucks.com. And I'm sure people always wonder, and they know that I'm behind all this Zion stuff, why plugging Zion at the same time. I put a little leech in there in the article at the top of ZionSucks.com to explain. There's a former Burn shareholder, and he's got a whole thing to get off his hands, so you can get stuff that was designed and put together. The Zion School was owned by the Fertittas, who have just bankrupted it and buy it back, and all sorts of other children at ZionSucks.com. But make a long story short, this guy's one of the good guys. So if you were out there looking for some Zion stuff, you just want some cool vintage T-shirts, you can go out there and get them. And he's still working with longer sponsored by Zions, but yeah, the guy helps him out every now and then. And that's about it. We're going to have to sign off. 7 minutes early. Oh, boy. And until next week, everybody. Thanks for stopping by.
All right. Well, I'll see you tomorrow.
All right. You have a good one.
Up to you guys.
Bye.